Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by our Bannermen, Lord Jason of House Ross, Sir Jimmy of House Nuts, Master of the Web, Lady Dawn of House Wright, Sir Chris of House Farber, Lady Tracy of House Faw, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, Sandy the Dragon, Blood of Queen Daenerys and Lady of Jameson, Lord John of House Fry, Lady Juliana of House Stradley, Sir David of House Fraser, Lady Liz of House Hendricks, Sir Matthew of House Perry, Lady Madeline of House Fritzel, Lady Adrian of House Dillard, Lady Ashley of House Gardner, Lady Lismelin of House Morales.
This episode of Bend the Knee is protected by Sir Ryan of House Turbush, Lady Sarah the Unraveler.
Our current champion is Lady Kira of House Arnold.
Our current Master of Coin is Lord Jason of House Ross.
Squire to Sir Matt, Lady Betsy of House Hudson.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we're into Daenerys, Five of a Clash of Kings, and in our Raven, we will be talking about the symbolism surrounding food and food choice, Sir Matt.
Hey, you know, that's something that people bring up a lot. That's one of the things that people talk about a lot when they talk about George's writings. He talks too much about food. I've never really specifically noticed that, but I know about the Arbor Gold, right, and the wines and stuff like that, and how that can sort of lead into things, but this is something that's sort of a bigger thing in the series, and we've never really talked about it, so we're gonna do it. We're gonna do so today.
I'm excited to talk about it. It's a really, really cool thing I found, and I was trying to do some research on that, just basically symbolism, colors, you know, wardrobe. And so we kind of have a series here of symbolism. I think our next few Ravens will be about symbolism. We also have a great one on Benjen Stark that we will get to at some point from Linda. So thank you to her. But, and don't forget, by the way, you can send us those Ravens at btkcast@gmail.com. We will read them. And I was pumped to get a new Raven. Like if you've been sitting there thinking about writing a Raven, please write it and send it in. It doesn't matter what it is, what the question is, which character, we will dive into it.
Yeah, absolutely. As you're over in Germany, man, still on vacation for a few more weeks. How's it going over there? How's everything, you know?
Yeah, it's going well. Okay, I would say I'm looking at the camera now. So I'm telling folks, okay, come check out the new setup on Patreon. Over on YouTube, you'll see some YouTube videos as well. Subscribe to our YouTube, check out the Patreon for the video version. And you'll see that the last three or four episodes, I have moved set location like every single time. Matt's been like, I don't know what I'm going to see next. I don't know if there's going to be cats running around in the background. I'm not so sure. Like, Ez is getting served coffee during the show. There's books on the bookshelf now in German. It's crazy. It's just kind of a crazy, crazy time, and I love it. So
I don't know what that book behind you says. Oxford. I think that's okay.
That's the Oxford Dictionary.
Are you really in Germany, or are you just pretending?
I'm posing. I pretended like I went to Germany, and I photoshopped myself into all this stuff on Instagram. Oh my god. I am actually in Germany. I promise. And it's great. So it's going really well. If you guys want to follow my stories, I've been posting updates on my story just over at womprat_2m on Instagram. So if you guys are interested in that, I think I post something every other day or so, because there's just tons to see over here. And it's been awesome. So, yeah.
Nice.
But how about you, man? Nice. How you doing?
I'm good. Slow, kind of chill weekend for me. Got a rotisserie, right, for my grill.
Yeah.
Kind of cool. So been out there, just did like a big chicken yesterday. Had it just, you know, rolling and rolling and rolling around in there, whatever. It was pretty cool. It's going to be used quite a lot, actually.
Wow.
I think I can do a pig on it.
Cheesy cow. I'm not going to lie. That sounds like something, like I visualized you using that or getting that or going to like a Home Depot or some store where you buy stuff like that. I don't know. Where did you order that online or
I got it as a birthday present, and it was a great present because we used it last night. It's pretty cool. Just, you know, it even mounts. It's like they got us the one that goes exactly on the grill I had. So I was like, well, this is easy to screw in some things.
Heck,
turn it on. It's motorized. You need to turn it on. It's motor. And then you just, you know, slide your chicken on and then just, it just put it on the grill for like 3 hours. It was awesome. Came out great. I was like, this looks really good. So,
well, now I have more of a, you know, coming out to see Matt is one thing in Portland, but when he's going to feed me some good food, I mean, that's another story. Now I might have to actually make the trip.
Hey, so. Well, you know, I can't promise that it's as cool as Germany, but it's pretty cool out here. Although it's hot, actually. It's like 100. We're going to go back up. And
oh, screw that. It's like 72 here. My God.
Jeez, that's perfect.
Yeah.
That is perfect. So, all right, guys. Well, before we begin here, you know, we've got sort of a news update here. All right. So, attention, listeners across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Houston. Do we have a pube problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped can have it cleared you for takeoff with their fourth generation and brand new lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes into the next planet with the performance package 4.0. The orbits in your pants will feel like you're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job from the leaders in male grooming. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code fansided20. You know, I'm going to go ahead and say it as, Jeffrey Bezos, he probably uses it, right? I mean, his rocket just went off.
Heck yes, it did. It cleared the hedges, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, that man. Yeah, no kidding. So, hey, one more thing on this too, like, I love that they give us the talking points, and the fourth generation trimmer, right? It's pushed as this, it's cutting edge. It's got all these different blades. It's super high powered.
It definitely cuts edges. I think that's the whole point.
Right. Yes, it should. Yeah. And it should, but it's funny because they'll slide in like this one line. It reduces, the blades are so good, Matt, that it reduces grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin safe technology. Now that's what I'm talking about right there. Because
hold on, we're talking about advanced blades here. Are these Valyrian steel blades?
Probably.
Is it a Valyrian steel trimmer?
Forged in old Valyria. I mean, these are like imbued with like spells and magic, man.
Hey, the trimmers that cut the hedges, that, you know, that it's got the light, it's got the 4,000
that guard the balls light of life.
There. Right. The shears that guard the realms of men. So, all right, guys. Hey, with that, remember to go get 20% off plus free shipping with the code fansided20 at manscaped.com. It's 20% off plus free shipping with the code fansided20 at manscaped.com for a clear trinity and beyond. Your space balls will thank you. Okay, Ez. So, you know, looking around, I got to say, We're in sort of a dry spell, okay?
Yeah.
With House of the Dragon news. There's not really a lot of House of the Dragon news, which is okay. Mm-hmm. Because right now, really, the only good news, the only news we should be hearing, if we were to hear any, is, hey, it was shut down again due to COVID. Because the COVID numbers are blowing up. So let's just, you know, public service announcement here.
Yeah.
Get your vaccines. Unless you don't want to, but...
Then don't get them.
If you have religious reasons, all that stuff, not to get them. Hey, that's your prerogative. But if you're somebody who's like on the fence, you're like, maybe, I don't know, I got it, I feel fine.
Yeah.
But man, it's just I look at the numbers; they're going back up. I've been tracking Germany because I'm like, is Ez even going to come back?
Right. Right. Yeah, honestly, if I do come back, and they're like, you have to quarantine for 2 weeks, I'm like, no problem. I was planning on doing that anyways. Okay, so, you know.
Actually, Germany looks better than the United States right now. So
I know. Germany's about to go to green, which means they can travel to like other more countries than we can. So
I know. It's crazy. So anyway, so I've been tracking other countries because, you know, Croatia is where they film a lot. Mm-hmm. Things seem to be okay over there. Mm-hmm. UK seems to be dropping, although the United States is spiking. So, but no news really with House of the Dragon. I guess with COVID and everything going on right now, it's probably good news because that means that they're still filming and there's nothing stopping it.
Yeah, that is good because we know from, like, we follow the Wheel of Time series and they had some major hiccups and just, you know, like, couldn't finish like the last two episodes.
That show's been delayed for like over a year.
Yeah, and so you really don't want to see your show go through that. The actors, they have different contracts. They're supposed to be in different places. Everything's real time sensitive, and you have to manage the time really well. If you ever get a chance to watch any of the documentaries on like how things were made, I just picked up. I was actually in a bookstore the other day in Berlin, and I was looking at a like how it was made, like a Game of Thrones. How it was made situation, where they're interviewing the actors, the producers, the writers, and all that kind of stuff for season 8 and really the whole series. And it's kind of amazing just to see how things are shot based upon like availability of actors and what they're doing. Do they need to be over at another set? So, like, some of them are doing, you know, multiple shows or in have a contract that they have to finish something before they can come out to Game of Thrones or the set and do something. It's just kind of wild. So yeah, we don't want any of those types of delays to happen.
Yeah. The only other news I found, man, did you see this interview? It's kind of that Kit Harington had posted. Yeah. This is kind of a thing, man. He said that he has since Game of Thrones, he's like checked himself in, after it's over, he like checked himself into rehab and went through like some serious depression and
really
and stuff like that. It says he's a lot better now, but you know, hey, that stuff's real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mental health is real.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It is. That sucks. Is it because of, well, I mean, also you have the pandemic. Yeah. You have the pandemic too. And like work's hard. I know for some of them, it's been hard to, secure more opportunities and stuff. So
yeah, it was an interview with a website called The Times, and I tried clicking on it, and that seems to be one of those websites where you have to pay for a subscription, which obviously I'm not going to do.
Uh-huh.
So I've tried to find some sort of thing, but you know, just has quotes like you feel like there's no way out. That's just who you are. He says, you know, I went through periods of depression where I wanted to do all sorts of things. Yeah. And he says, you know, but he says he's doing better now. I mean, that's our boy. I hope, you know.
Yeah.
Get the help you need, Kit Harington. We need you around for season 9 of Game of Thrones, which I'm sure will happen at some point.
Absolutely.
Will it have anything to do with the books? But probably not. But I don't know. The way HBO Max is going, they're like, yeah, whatever. We'll just make it. It'll be fine.
Yeah, really. I mean, don't be surprised if they do that. Actually, that'd be freaking sick.
I do not put it out of the realm of possibilities that we could theoretically someday get a season 9 or a Game of Thrones post thing script or movie or, you know, HBO special.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing I'm seeing here news wise, I just went to shout out to our network, Fansided, and to the blog Winter is Coming. You can tell it's a dry spell when you go there and there's literally, like, the top article, our articles are 7 characters that Game of Thrones kind of forgot, and then watch pilots of Game of Thrones, other shows for free. This one is The Three-Body Problem Begins Casting at Netflix, so following kind of Dan and Dave. But I mean, you know, that's Dan over there. He runs that site, and there's just not a lot of House of the Dragon news. So, yeah,
yeah, wow. Yeah, that's okay. We're in a dry spell right now, but it's all right because we've got the books to dive back into. Oh, this was funny. Okay, hold on. Let me get this. So, remember, if you guys remember a couple years ago, now, which is crazy to think about. In May of 2019, George said, if I don't have the Winds of Winter in hand when I arrive in New Zealand's Worldcon, which is the summer of 2020, mm-hmm. imprison me on White Island until I'm done.
Wow. Has anyone done that?
I don't think so.
Should we imprison him? though, seriously. Should we take it?
I mean, you know, I guess you could sort of say, hey, COVID happened in 2019. We were not expecting some sort of major pandemic, but I think we need to call him out.
He told us we could. He gave us permission.
He said it right here.
Yeah, to there's lock him
no
up.
One to, there's no one to blame but me.
But me. I'll never forget the day when you first showed me Not a Blog way back in the day, and I was looking at like, when are they coming out? And his mood was currently bouncy. And I was like, what is going on? Yeah.
Let's see here. If things go well, I hope to have it finished by the end of 2014. He was then optimistic that 2015 would be the year. Maybe he can finish The Winds of Winter and Fire and Blood in 2018. It's not going to be done in 2019, but if I don't have it at Worldcon, imprison me. Mm-hmm. 2020. Mm-hmm. So that's the timeline of the past few years, but and past decade, let me say, of him saying, well, hopefully I'll have Winds of Winter done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. Is he still working on it, Matt?
He hasn't updated Not a Blog in a while. He's gone dark.
God dang it. That we don't even know.
that's either good or bad.
That's either really good or that's really bad. You know? Let me ask you a question, because I love George and I would love to meet him and talk with him. He'd probably think that I'm, who knows what he would think. But I would love to just ask him, do you just get done writing like an Arya chapter or a John chapter and just go get like hammered? Do you think he ever just goes and just has a, you know, he's out at that cabin. Are they bringing him drinks? What's his favorite beverage? You know, what type of alcoholic beverage does he want? Does that help him write better? Has he ever written a chapter drunk? You know?
I don't know.
Does that help his writing?
I don't know.
Would it help, Matt? Would it help us get the story done?
I think for him, it's more like he doesn't get chapters written. It's almost like, okay. You know, George is like the kind of person where he's sitting there and he's got, you know, he's got nothing on his desk but like pencil and paper. I know he uses a typewriter here, but I'm just thinking about this.
Yeah.
So he's, you know, it's like, imagine you're at a desk and you just got like a pencil and paper. It's like, all right, I've just got to write this thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's like you're sitting there and nothing's coming to your head. And you're like, all right.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing you know, it's like, okay, well, I'm gonna need some paper clips. So then he gets the paper clips out.
Yeah.
Sets those on the desk. And it's like, all right, well, you know, then he's like finagling with it to get it, you know, exactly to where the desk looks clean. Then he gets a paper clip out. Then he gets two paper clips out. And then he's, you know, turning them into figures and fight, you know, and then it's like, anything he can find,
God,
to just be like, well, no, I got to finish this. Or, you know, I got to do this, or, you know.
I just wonder, because remember when we had the talk? I think the question, like, it was almost like neither one of us wanted to ask the question. But when the pandemic hit and he started like going in and saying he was revising the chapters that had been released and all this kind of stuff was happening, you know, you looked at me and I looked at you and we didn't want to ask the question, but we're like, do you think years went by where he didn't touch it? Like where he did that exact thing that you just said, where he sat at a desk and he got one line. And that sucks. And I feel for him. I don't even know how you, like right. I said, I don't know how
I couldn't finish. I mean, I could.
Hell
it wouldn't
no,
be good, could. But I could. No. I could finish it, yes.
Yeah, it's just so intricate. And when we get to today's Raven and we look at the food and we look at the things like the levels and the layers at which he writes at, it is no wonder that when his life kind of, when HBO and the Game of Thrones show got all the success, I mean, man, he's getting hit up for interviews, read my book. Can we put your name on the front of a book that you've reviewed it or you were helped in working on it, video games, all this stuff. It's just crazy.
So. Well, now he's got all this other work we know of with HBO, Max. He signed that, 5-year. There was no numbers specifically, but I think we broke it down and we were like, it's probably around $50 million.
Right. Well, and here's the thing. I'm cool if we get more like Dunkin' Egg stuff or he's working on piecing together. Like if he's motivated to be a script writer or something, because remember how we looked up like when he did Dunkin' Egg, he would write a book like A Clash of Kings, then he went and wrote The Hedge Knight. And then he went and wrote more of his backstory. And that helped him take characters further and add depth to his writing. So if going and working on the HBO show and figuring more of that out, and then cool. I mean, it's more Game of Thrones content. Right. So yeah,
I'm down. You know, I'm down. You know, I think maybe you just sort of think of it sort of like Westeros is seeming to me like it's going to be Warner Brothers' version of what Disney has with Star Wars.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, you know, when Disney bought Star Wars, they had, you know, you had the originals, prequels, obviously all of the extended universe stuff, but then you had like the Clone Wars TV show. And right now it's sort of like, okay, well, we've got the main series and now we're going to go do a prequel and then we're going to start adding in animated stuff and all this other stuff. So there's a lot more Westeros stuff coming, but it's just, we're like in this lull until it's kind of like where we were with, when Disney bought Star Wars, we were kind of waiting for the first
sequel movie
for a while. And that's kind of where we're at right now with this. And because, I mean, it seems to me it's going to be their big, hey, this is going to be a big cash cow for us. We want this to be big. I mean, you're bringing on George to, or you know, George Martin to help write everything and do everything. So I imagine we're going to be getting a lot of Game of Thrones content. It's just we're in a lull right now.
Right. Yeah, which is fine. Yeah, HBO's smart for going after him and making sure that he's there as a part of all this, and they're getting really good, authentic Westeros content. I think it's a good thing. It's a good thing for us, and so that's why I'm like, we jest. I mean, I really do want George to take his time and finish the books and do whatever he needs to do. I hope they get finished. He's getting up there in years, and I hope he's doing okay. It's personal for him though. You know, I mean, like I read a couple interviews and saw him at one point talking to, it was at a panel, and he really wants to finish the series. He really wants to get it done. It's just, I think it really broke him that the series went, he had some of his secrets, the big reveals in the book series are already revealed. And I think that really actually affected him. I think that's hard to finish when the things that you're driving, the excitement in writing it is already out there. Your big spoilers are gone. So now I still think there's plenty of spoilers left. I just think that's hard for a writer to take that.
There is a WorldCon, it's ChicagoCon shot. It's like ChiCon 8.
Okay.
That's his next appearance, which is September 1st through the 5th, 2022. Oh, sorry. I thought it was this year. I was getting really excited. Again. Gosh, dang it.
maybe he's just going to be holed up though for a whole another year. That's fine. Let him put him back in the cabin, and if he needs somebody to come out there and fire him up and get some inspiration, I'll go. I'll go out there every day. You know?
Yeah, nothing, no news, man. All right. Well, anyway, guys. Okay. Well, with that, we're going to dive into the reread here, but let's go ahead and take a quick pause for a message from our sponsors. Okay, as with that, let's go ahead and take a look. This week, we're into Daenerys 5 of A Clash of Kings. So Dany considers the defeat of the Undying to be Drogon's victory. However, Zaro, whose guest she is, warns her that the warlocks are gathering their power to come for her, and that the other two great merchant consortiums want her either expelled from the city or killed outright. Dany realizes she must flee, for Zaro's protection can only go so far. The merchant again asks her to marry him, but this time Dany learns that Zaro really wants is one of the dragons. Dany tells him that it would cost 1/3 of all the ships in the world in order for her to give up one of her dragons. Zaro leaves, and Dany questions Ser Jorah about some of the mysteries she saw in the House of the Undying. Jorah says that the three heads of the dragon represent Aegon and his two sisters, but Dany's not convinced. The knight confirms that Rhaegar did play a silver harp, and he says that the prince's son was the promised one in the vision. The infant Aegon was killed during the sack of King's Landing. Jorah has no knowledge of the Song of Ice and Fire. Dany later sets out with the exiled knight and her blood riders to find ships to take her from Carth. Along the docks, Jorah warns her that a big, scarred man and an old man with a staff are following them. When a merchant hands her a beautiful box as a gift, Dany opens it to find a green scarab within. The creature within the box flies out and mayhem erupts. The creature would have bit Dany had the old man with the staff not knocked it out of her hands. The merchant was a sorrowful man, and the creature a manticore that would have killed Dany had it bitten her. They learn that the huge scarred eunuch is the pit fighter Strong Belwas, and the old man is his squire Artisan Whitebeard, both sent by Magister Illyrio Mapatis to return them to Pentos. The old man recognizes Morma, and the exile recognizes him but cannot place a name. Artisan claims that he comes from the Seven Kingdoms and squired for a knight of House Swan as a young man. The two claim that Illyrio sent for them because he wishes to have her dragons in order to bring justice to the Seven Kingdoms, which are a divided and warring realm. Dany concedes that she must leave Karth, but commands them to change the names of their three ships of that to that of Aegon's three dragons. So I guess a few things here. Remember, this is a reread. Mm-hmm. So the sort of the big reveal here is going to be that not that we get it in this chapter, but we know as this is a reread. So spoilers, if you, you're unfamiliar here, right, that Artisan Whitebeard is actually Barristan Selmy.
Right.
So that's a good point to take away. And then in the show, it's done pretty much the same way. Almost this whole scene plays out almost the same way. There is no Strong Belwas, and he's immediately revealed to be Barristan Selmy. But other than that, it's pretty much the same on that end. But now we'll dive back into the book version here. As so definitely, you know, some interesting things here. You know, the conversation that she has with Zaro is, yeah. I mean, Dany's 100% right in this when he's offering her, saying, oh, you know, you could give, I won't sell me, let's sell one of your dragons and we can get whatever ships we want. She's, you know, she says, there's only three dragons in the world.
In the world, yeah.
You're drastically underestimating the the value of this dragon. And this will play sort of a important role to her later when she goes to get her Unsullied army and she, you know, sells, air quote, one of her dragons for that. And then she has her dragon kill the slave handler. And then we go forward. But so this scene will sort of, that conversation will sort of carry forward to into another scene later.
Yeah, no, you're right. This is totally Zaro. Everyone is just trying to manipulate her. They want something from her. There's really no authentic offers or offers of allegiance, I guess, without her giving up something. She has really nothing besides the dragons, right? The dragons are, I say nothing. Dragons are huge, as she points out here. That's the whole thing. She is, when she's the beggar queen, whatever, princess, whatever you call her, when she's with her brother, like, for a while, their Targaryen blood and their features and that bloodline is important, and it gains them access to some allies and some, you know, shelter, food, and things like that. And now she has these dragons, and these should be worth... She knows their value, and everyone else does as well, but they're so little. They haven't matured enough yet. Although they matured enough to take down the House of the Undying, they just are undervalued by everyone. And Dany's a little bit, I think, underestimated. Like, I think people believe she is naive and they're going to try to take advantage of her. And that's something else that seems to happen throughout the various cities that she goes to. So yeah, you're right. She tells Zaro, no way. There's no way. You don't have one third of the ships in the world. And therefore it's not worth me giving up one of my dragons.
And I mean, she's 100% right. I'm going to try and pull up some of the quotes here because, I mean, it's pretty obvious here. And this is sort of, I think this is also an important chapter for Daenerys. I mean, a lot of that, but even her conversation here with Zaro, where Dany, I think sometimes we just sort of, when we think about like the Game of Thrones, we think so much more in like the mindset of like Cersei and Sansa, because all of these people have sort of pieces to play with. Where Dany is sort of different because she's on the other side of the world. She's not playing the same type of Game of Thrones that we're playing on the other side, but she is still playing it in her own way here. Mm-hmm. We just think about it different because these are different thrones, right? That we're talking about here. But her decision to not do this is obvious, I think, is something that should be made of note because it's incredibly smart on her part. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to sell you one of my dragons.
Yeah,
you're just you know, you're only here for my dragon. You don't even, you say you want to marry me. You don't really want to marry me. You just want to marry a dragon.
Yeah, for sure. And the also, just for context, what's happening in this chapter as well is she's just destroyed the House of the Undying, and she's really pissed off Pyat Pri and the warlocks. And so they want, I think it's the merchants or whatever, the Order of Merchants, they want to expel her from the city. There are public outcries to like get her out. So she needs some allies, and she needs some, you know, she wants ships. She wants to get men, maybe an army, and go back and take the Iron Throne. And it's funny that right now we have a situation, I think. So to jump ahead a little bit, Illyrio has sent Ardiston, right? And Belwas, right? There as well. Yep. To kind of bring her back with the three ships, and he's heard that she has dragons. Think of how different that would have been if she does go back. I mean, young Griff's there supposedly, right? And she could have gone back. Did he have a plan with all of that? Like,
yeah,
you know, because she kind of goes off of the rails here and does what, not off the rails, but she will take her own course. She'll make her own way with Illyrio's ships later on, and she won't go back to see him. So yeah, I don't know. I think that's kind of, she is playing her own Game of Thrones, and she does know where she wants to go. But then you think like she could have gone there and then gone over to like the whole event of her going back to Westeros or to the Iron Throne would have happened a lot sooner. But now George takes us on this whole arc where she goes and she gets, you know,
we're not even there yet. Right.
Not even close to go through all the cities and to free everyone and become mother of dragons, and just it's crazy. Like there was a shortcut back, which was to go to Illyrio, go back up to Braavos, gather your forces, and go right across the Narrow Sea. But instead, she goes literally the opposite direction, which is kind of what Quaithe says to do. So,
yeah. I'm looking at some of the thing here. So there's quite a bit of them sort of going back and forth about the dragon, and the ships, and talking about yeah, exactly what you want here. You know, they're just going back and forth. He says, "I'm trying to set a price on one of the three living dragons in the world." Dany smiled at him sweetly. "It seems to me that one third of all the ships in the world would be fair." Zaro's tears ran down his cheeks on either side of his jewel-encrusted nose. "Did I not warn you not to enter the Palace of Dust? This is the very thing that I feared. The whispers of the warlocks have made you as mad as a Malwarian's wife. A third of all the ships in the world, I say." Dany had not seen him since. His sinshal brought her messages, each cooler than the last. She must quit his house. He was done feeding her and her people. He demanded the return of his gifts, which she had accepted in bad faith. Her only consolation was that at least she had the great good sense not to marry him.
Yeah, wow. Well, yeah, he's something else. Apparently, yeah, there's more. Well, we'll come back to Zaro later with his arc and his story and what's happening. You know, when she leaves Karth, I think the rumor and the legend of Dany and what she does and her dragons grow, and Karth now becomes, like, she's there. It's almost like the city where in which she was before, prior. If you've seen her dragons, people come chasing her there, and then Karth will also be seeking her out later. So right now, mm-hmm. No one wants her, and they went to exile her and all this kind of stuff, but later on, she'll grow in power and prestige, and then they come a-knocking, right? They want right. To get in good with her. And I just want to point out something. I love every time we do a Dany chapter to try to find these references, okay? It's the bells, my friend. It's the bells and it's the chiming. All right. So as you read this chapter.
Right there.
Yeah.
Her bell rang softly. Yes.
Yeah. So that was Drogon's victory, not mine, Dany wanted to say, but she held her tongue. The Dothraki would esteem her all the more for a few bells in her hair. She chimed as she mounted her silver mare, and again with every stride, but neither Ser Jorah nor her blood riders made mention of it. To guard her people and her dragons in her absence, she chose, and then she lists off her blood riders and whatever. But it's just a little mention that the Dothraki people esteem her when she has more bells in her hair. And what really caught me was she chimed as she mounted her silver mare. Like, it's not even just like that you're mentioning the bells, but you're mentioning the sound of the bells chiming, right? And it's just another reference to Bells. And I thought, if somebody doesn't think she's going,
hold on. Let me take this one step further. just a little bit further down from where I was, right? The warlocks whispered of three treasons, once for blood and once for gold and once for love. The first traitor was surely Mira Mazdar, who had murdered Khal Drogo and their unborn son to avenge her people. Could Pyat Pri and Zaro Zohan Doxis be the second and the third? She did not think so. What Pyat did was not for gold, and what Zaro did, he never had truly loved her. The streets grew emptier as they passed through a district given over a gloomy stone warehouses. Aego went before her and Joko behind, leaving Ser Jorah-Mormont at her side. Her bell rang softly, and Dany found her thoughts returning to the Palace of Dust once more, as the tongue returns to a space left by a missing tooth. Child of three, they had called her, daughter of death, slayer of lives, bride to fire. So many threes. Three fires, three mounts to ride, three treasons. The dragon has three heads, she sighed. Then she goes on, and then this is going to sort of go into more of that. But it's just also, hey, right there is another the bell reference.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is it even if we had never seen that episode of Game of Thrones, I mean, it's in here. Right. I mean, even it could totally just be something else. But it is one of these things where when you begin to look at characters, chapters and things that are associated with them, clearly the word bell appears a lot in Dany chapters. Now, a lot of it is because she gets the bells in her hair, because that's sort of that's what Khal Drogo does. And you could jump forward and just think about this. We don't have to dive down this rabbit hole, but maybe when we think about the bells, like the episode, the Game of Thrones episode, because that's us using some sort of forward thinking to try and think of something that might occur, is it reminds her of Khal Drogo, and that's why she burns that city down, because it reminds her of being Dothraki, right? And she is Khaleesi, and that's what Khal Drogo would do. He would just go demolish a city and take it over. That's how the Khalasar work. They're not playing the Game of Thrones. They're playing the just ride and take over, and that is what it is.
Yeah, one of the things too, so as you think forward and you think forward to Meereen and you think forward to her coming to Westeros, what's happening in Qarth, and actually really the whole setup to Illyrio giving her to Khal Drogo, she's just been used, right? She's just been used. People only want her for her dragons and her bloodline. Like, no one's really looking at her and seeing the value in her, like, leadership, her decision making, all those other things. It's literally just her physical characteristics, her bloodline, her dragons, the symbolicness or whatever of her being one of the last Targaryens. So when I think it's in this chapter, she kind of says that the people here, they don't want me. They don't want me. They only want my dragons, right? And then when you flash forward to Meereen, and then you go to King's Landing, same thing. And that in the Game of Thrones season 8, right? Jon. It was like, they respect her, but is it only because of the dragons, Matt? Is that the only, it's almost like I don't know. It makes you think that's been a growing theme, is that she's trying to establish, like, this is me. She controls the dragon. She tells them when to breathe fire. She could prevent what happened in Slaver's Bay. If King's Landing goes the same way, she could prevent that, but she doesn't. So I don't know, man. I think she's going to do all those things. Maybe she's not mad. Maybe it's not like she goes like full Mad Queen. I'm not saying that, but my gosh, right. I mean,
yeah, no, I'm with you. It's going to play out. I mean, it's going to play out. I mean, George has. Somehow we're going to learn the mystery of this, regardless if it's had anything close to resemble what happens in the final season. But because George just includes it too much, it's like, as we'll get to the food and stuff later in today's Raven and episode and stuff, it's something that comes up too much. Okay, so now we're going to kind of shift gears here a little bit more to sort of the three heads, the dragon prophecy. So she's asking Jorah, do you know what that means, Jorah? Right, the dragon has three heads. Says, Your Grace, the sigil of House Targaryen is a three-headed dragon, red on black. I know that, but there are no three-headed dragons. The three heads were Aegon and his sisters, Visenya and Rhaenys, she recalled. I am descendant from Aegon and Rhaenys through their son Aenys, and their grandsons, Jaehaerys. And then, you know, then they're going to, then they go on a little bit here. Blue Lips speaks only lies. Isn't that what Zaro told you? Why do you care about the war, what the warlocks whispered? All they wanted was to suck the life from you. She says, perhaps, yet the things I saw, a dead man in the prow of a ship, a blue rose, a banquet of blood. What does that mean? What does any of it mean? You know, Khaleesi, a mummer's dragon, you said. What is a mummer's dragon? Pray. A cloth dragon on poles, Danny explained. Mummers use them in their follies to give heroes something to fight. You know, Danny could not let it go. His is the song of ice and fire, my brother said. And I'm certain it was my brother, not Viserys, but Rhaegar. He had a harp with silver strings. And then he agrees. Prince Aegon, or Prince Rhaegar, played that. Prince Aegon, right? That's the babe. You know, so there's a woman in a bed with a babe at her breast. My brother said the babe was the prince that was promised, and told her to name him Aegon. Prince Aegon was Rhaegar's heir by Elia of Dorne. But if he is the prince that was promised, the promise was broken along with his skull when the Lannisters dashed his head against the wall. She says, I remember they murdered Rhaegar's daughter as well, the little princess Rhaenys, she was named, like Aegon's sister. There was no Visenya, but he said the dragon has three heads. What is the Song of Ice and Fire? It's none I've heard. So and then it kind of shifts gears, and that's sort of it. So I mean, this, you could spend episodes breaking this down here, but let me start here as with some, I guess, sort of maybe a different perspective of sort of the three heads of the dragon that I think we've really ever looked at, or perhaps is something that I think often gets overlooked, because I was just kind of reading this, kind of reminded me of things. First of all, the idea, right? You know, it's Aegon and his two sisters, right? Rhaenys, mm-hmm. and Visenya. They were the ones that together conquered Westeros, not one. And I think so often we view like the prince that was promised and the three heads of the dragon, or perhaps even sometimes the third head of the dragon, is just John. And it's just going to be John, like sort of that hero to save the day, Azor Ahai and all that stuff. And I think sometimes those get blended a lot, like the prince that was promised and Azor Ahai and the last hero and all of these things sort of get blended into one person. But what if it is actually you need three people? And I think people have looked at this before, but I thought let's take a look at this today. What if it is you need three heads of the dragon? Let's just, for example, say it's going to be Aegon, like young Griff. Let's say he's the real deal. Mm-hmm. Young Griff, Danny, and John. And that's what you will ultimately need, is you'll need three people to come together, right? Maybe these John with the True North, Danny with Essos and the Dothraki and everything, maybe young Griff, who has at this point sort of united the South, and that's what you're going to need to take on the oncoming, say, White Walker army.
Well, yeah, I mean, then it always comes down to who are the three, right? Like would young Griff, as everyone calls him, Fagon, can right. he really be one of the heads? Because you have two that we're sure of, right? You know, you have Danny, and then R plus L equals J. So right. John, right? Who is, does John have a twin sister? Does it need to be
yep. two girls and a guy? Like maybe it needs to also be like Visenya, Rhaegar, and Rhaenys.
Or yeah. Aegon. I don't know, man. Who else could it be? People. I mean, at one point people are throwing out Tyrion as a possible candidate for, you know, because of the Tyrion Targaryen situation. So who are the legitimate contenders to be the three heads
to secretly be Targaryens?
Yeah,
I would say the strongest contenders young Griff, I think, is an obvious. Well, I mean, John is obviously number one. Danny, we know, is legitimately a Targaryen, although there are secrets out there that Danny is there's the theory out there that Danny is actually Rhaegar's daughter. That's one sort of offshoot, but that still has her as a Targaryen. John is the most common, number one. He's the Prince's Promise. Maybe not the Prince's Promise, the whole deal regardless. He's
He's a hero.
Liana, yep. R plus L equals J. Then, you know, Mira Reed is one who gets thrown out there as somebody because she is, because she, her similarity in looks to John, she's roughly the same age. Howland Reed is the one who saved the day. Maybe Ned couldn't take two kids back. People would get suspicious. You know, there's a lot to that. And then that would explain a lot of the sort of mystery surrounding Howland Reed if she was, say, John's sister. And also, but at this point, that'd just be sort of a lot to bring in the last two books. And because she's also kind of just been hiding out in the middle of nowhere. And then she sort of comes in. So theoretically, I guess that could be something in the last lines. Tyrion, there's actually arguments to be made for Tyrion and Cersei and Jaime, all of which there's legitimate arguments where Tyrion is sort of the most, just because of his eyes and Tywin's hate for him could go even further, because he knew, you know, that because Tywin never said anything and he loved his wife, and maybe the Mad King, you know, there's implications the Mad King took liberties with her, right? Raped her, basically. And there's also arguments for Cersei and Jaime because they're both, you know, they've a little bit mad. There's an argument there to be made. Outside of that, the only other one we ever did was sort of the Illyria Sand. Sorella could theoretically be Rhaenys Targaryen. And then outside of that, I don't know of anybody who really could fall into that realm of being a sort of secret Targaryen. I'm sure there are, but that's sort of where I'm at on any possibilities.
It's really funny when you go look up, when you just type in like, who are the three heads of the dragon, and you start getting into some of the Reddit comments and stuff like that. One of them was, well, clearly, you know, it's Jon Snow, Daenerys Targaryen, and Tyrion Hill being the bastard son, right, of the, yes, Mad King. I was just like, it's just so funny how serious people take, you know, something like that. Which,
well, yeah, there is another one, because if you go down the Mance, is, we just did a video on this, if Mance Rayder is actually Rhaegar, then Aemon Steelsong, I kept calling him Aemon Steelstrong in the video, or, you know, on the podcast too, Aemon Steelsong, if he is married to Dala, that would make her a Targaryen, you know, that would make her, well, a Targaryen. So that would then make another Targaryen. Not that he's going to be able to do anything as a baby in a battle against anyone, but
now hold on. There's one more. Okay. So, and I want to just give a shout out to this individual who's over on our YouTube commenting a lot. Yeah. Val. So you have an individual, her name is, C-Star. And we've gotten, I don't know if you saw this, we've gotten numerous comments from her just about various things. We did the Sorella Sand video. We talked about Alaris and whether Rhaenys could still be alive through the character Sorella Sand, who both were born in, what, 83, right, after the conquest?
Roughly the same time.
Or there, 380, yeah. So anyways, she said, because I look up the, I quoted like the So Spake Martin, and she clarified like that Martin didn't say that character was dead, but that it was believed that she was, that there was no doubt that she was dead. Meaning, like, right, in the story, there is no doubt. No one doubts it, right? He didn't say she was dead, but that no one doubted that she was dead. And I was like, let's go. So that was one comment. And then C-Star also said this. Let's see. I think that Griff and Val are twin brother and sister, children of Rhaegar and Lyanna. So Griff and Val, she says, is short for, like, Valyria. Are twin brother and like they're the children of Rhaegar and Lyanna. One went north, one went south. The Kingsguard are still alive, and Ned helped them go into hiding. Jon is the Sword of the Morning and son of Ned and Ashara. Dany will be with Aegon, not Jon. Jon and Aegon were merged for the show. Aegon is not called a Mummer Dragon. He is called the Mummer's Dragon, meaning the Mummer is not him. He's not the false dragon, but it's the possession. The mum, whoever, you know, the mummers or mummers, right, is possessive. Varys is the mummer. So basically, Quaithe is saying, beware Varys's dragon. Aegon is called a dragon. So it just cool comments like that we're getting over on YouTube that I think are
that's
interesting.
Really good. That's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So cool stuff there. So throw Val in there as that third head. So Danny, Griff, and Val, John. I mean, hey, we got some contenders now.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I guess out of those, I mean, what do you? I mean, which do you think Bearer sort of Bearer, because this is a big Danny sort of prophecy. Mm-hmm. This is, I mean, and she's looking here, and she's talking with Jorah, and she's looking at, you know, she's looking. They're talking. They literally. This is one of the first times, at least. I mean, maybe it's been brought up before, but I mean, we literally say the Song of Ice and Fire is brought up here.
Yeah, the Song of Ice and Fire is brought up here. This is, which I think people haven't really. Whenever you see that or you hear it talked about or mentioned, it's a big deal. This is a series about the Song of Ice and Fire. I'm trying to find it real quickly. There are colors associated with various characters and gemstones. As I said, I've been doing some research trying to figure out like what the symbolism is with these. And I'm assuming find the one on Varys. I can't find it right now, but I'll get back to you guys on it. Anyways, I think it's... I don't know, man. You think about point of view, okay? So I saw someone, because I was looking this up, Stannis. People throw out Stannis as someone who could be... How important is Stannis? He doesn't even have a true point of view, right? It's Davos's point of view. Other people have points of view of Stannis. So is he... He's Azor Ahai. Is he... Because Robert Baratheon and he both share some Targaryen blood, right? Aren't they related to the Targaryens a little bit? So people were throwing him out as one of the heads of the dragon. It's brought up that, hey, he doesn't have a point of view. So Dany's important because she has a point of view. John has a point of view. Who's the third person that has like a point of view that is going to matter? I guess that's what I get down to is when you look at Griff or you look at even Val, these are characters who pop in and out of other people's points of views. Maybe later on they will gain a point of view. That might be something that has happened in the series. Like Jaime Lannister at first is not given one, and then later on he will gain his own point of view. So if we see that happen in Winds of Winter, whoever we see that through, like Arianna, right? Arianna Martell now has a point of view. I think that's significant. I know all the characters are significant, but when you keep a character and they're the main point of view for like a long amount of time, I feel like that would matter more to a prophecy like the three heads of the dragon, you know?
Right. Right. Well, and look at the lines here, because this is something. So Danny is specifically asking, what is the Song of Ice and Fire? So that, I mean, anytime you're writing, even for George, who likes to sort of write things in ways that other people might not expect, right? With who's gets the point of view for a lot of these key moments and things like that. But for Danny to specifically ask, what is the Song of Ice and Fire? That's not just something for a reader to pick up on and say, okay, what is this? Now I want to know. To me, it means that Danny is going to be the one who at least hears it in her own way, or is the person who finds out what the Song of Ice and Fire is. Like, it's going to be explained to Danny in a Danny point of view chapter, what the Song of Ice and Fire is.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean that's something to consider, is because I think we sort of, you know, you can still explain a lot of what's going to happen. You know, Bran obviously has visions. Melisandre talks about Azor Ahai and the Long Night and everything. Even to sort of project a little bit forward here into the show, you know, for starters, they never even talk about the Song of Ice and Fire in the show, but yeah. Jon is never really told in the show that he's really supposed to be this one who's going to end the Long Night, and he's supposed to be, it's sort of just, hey, you're Rhaegar's son is sort of the big, you know, sort of reveal to him, but it's never like, oh, you're going to be the one that's going to defeat the Night King. That's something we all did as fans. Mm-hmm. And you know, the term Azor Ahai, or the term you know, like hey, Stannis is going to be the one who's going to defeat the to save us, right? He's the Azor Ahai. He's all of this stuff. But it's never really explained like that to John. We just sort of get it. So for Dany to be asking, what is the Song of Ice and Fire here? I think that's got to be significant. If we think about that in that light, what is it going to mean for Dany if she's the one who learns what the Song of Ice and Fire is and what that could mean?
Yeah, that's a good point, because whenever I think of the Song of Ice and Fire, I think of Rhaegar and Lyanna, and I think of those bloodlines coming together and their offspring, and Dany is not, as you know, sort of not their offspring unless Lemon Gate or there's some other situation. The Song of Ice and Fire is going to be explained to her through her, and that, but it's somehow connected to her brother Rhaegar. You know, it's, I know what you're saying, which is like, it's important that it's mentioned in her chapter and that she's seeing the prophecies about all of this, and she's supposed to come to some understanding of what it all means. She's got Quaithe talking to her. She's got the House of the Undying. Marwyn the Mage is on his way out there to help her sort it all out, I think. But is she the princess that was promised, according to Aemon? Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. What does a chapter like that look like? Because that could for her mean, right in the show, we see her big divide with John is because she wants to be queen of Westeros. And he's, you know, that could his parentage could cause a claim to her. You could cause people to view him as the rightful ruler rather than her. But here, for her to learn about what the Song of Ice and Fire is, which again, this is never mentioned in the show. That vision is totally different in the show. And so, you know, one of the things we see is when she goes north above the wall to help them out. Well, if a similar situation like that plays out, which I don't think that's going to happen at all. I don't think, hey, the whole mission to get a white, to bring back to Cersei, to get Cersei to agree, to have a true, I don't think that any of that is happening in the books. I do think there's still a possibility that she could lose a dragon to a Night King like character, which we still don't have, or the White Walkers or whatever, however that's Euron, however it plays out. But it seems to me that if she's learning about this true Song of Ice and Fire at any point, that would make her more likely to be someone to help to fight to take them on, rather than what we see in the show, which is sort of her being like, all right, well, I'll help you fight your war, Jon Snow, if you help me fight mine. If you bend the knee, I'll help you mm-hmm. go fight this random war against things I don't even think are real.
Yeah.
Because here it seems to me like she may end up learning that this stuff is way more real than she thought before any of that stuff could theoretically happen.
Yeah, this is crazy, man. So you go to a search of Ice and Fire and you type in a Song of Ice and Fire, and there are literally three references to it, right? In the whole series, and it's all in A Clash of Kings, and it's all Dany chapters, and it's Dany 4 and Dany 5, right?
Right.
And so it's the House of the Undying, where, you know, he's the prince that was promised, and his is the Song of Ice and Fire. He looked up when he said it, and his eyes met Dany's, and it seemed as if he saw her standing there beyond the door. There must be one more, he said. Though whether he was speaking to her or to the woman in the bed, she could not say. The dragon has three heads. It's all kind of discombobulated. It starts off with the woman is asking, so she's seeing this. The woman is saying, will you make a song for him? The woman asked. The man replied, he has a song. So, okay, Rhaegar, if it's Lyanna asking Rhaegar, will you make a song for him, meaning a boy child, right? The man replies, he has a song. He is the prince that was promised, and his is the Song of Ice and Fire. So whoever that is.
But there must be one more?
And then you look, right.
Because that doesn't make sense.
There must be one more, he said, though whether he was speaking to her or the woman in the bed, she could not say. The dragon has three heads. So is that Elia?
Well,
when Aegon is born, and there must be one more. Then that would mean that
Aegon is Aegon, potentially young Griff, or the Aegon that dies is the prince that is. He is, his song is the Song of Ice and Fire. Not, it wouldn't be Jon's. it would be, because there still must be one more.
Yeah, that's yeah. It's if that's Aegon or if that's Jon. Yeah, who's the one more? I mean, after Jon, you have one. No, it. I know. It's crazy. You've got Rhaenys. You've got Aegon. He has two kids with Elia.
What's the birth order? The birth order, I think, is Visenya, Aegon, Rhaenys, right?
I think so. Yeah, Rhaenys is the youngest. Visenya is the oldest. I think so. Yeah.
So, yeah. Is that what he was trying for? Is to have girl, boy, girl?
I don't. Yeah. I don't know if he means it to be that literal or not. But this, he is the prince that was promised, and his is the Song of Ice and Fire.
That could. Yeah. Yeah, there's no way to have a girl, boy, girl in that situation and have John be anywhere involved in it unless young Griff is legitimately the one, and then John is N plus A equals J. But why would you be at the Tower of Joy? Why would Lyanna be at the Tower of Joy unless you just go there and, you know, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. It's one of those. This is just, and again, Dany's looking at this, and this is something that she's seeing in the vision, and it's all kind of cloudy, and things are happening and moving. And is it real? Is it not? The other thing is what Aemon says to us later. Aemon Targaryen, Maester Aemon, that Rhaegar is almost like misinformed. Like he used to talk to and correspond with Rhaegar, and Rhaegar believed it was the prince that was promised. And he said, really, it was the princess that was promised. And the line, like Rhaegar believes that the prince that is promised, you know, the ghost of Highheart prophesies that from their line, the prince that is promised will be born. And they believe it to be either Rhaegar or Rhaegar's son. And Aemon says, no, truly it was a princess born of that line. Not Rhaegar, but his sister Dany. So now we have all of that, and she's the princess that is promised. And so she is the Song of Ice and Fire, if you will, or whatever. Maybe, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Hold on. I gotta look at the... I gotta look at some timelines here.
Matt's like, hold on a second, let me just
think about this for a second.
That's funny. Go ahead.
And I guess we forget, because again, the show sort of blends us, and even fan art sort of causes us to think about people in totally different light. Yeah. Than they actually would be, because Daenerys, right, during a Clash of Kings, is really only like 14, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but all obviously be looking at Emilia Clarke, who's like in her 20s and 30s playing her, because it's over like 7 seasons and stuff. And then a lot of the fan art makes her look like she's 16 to 18 to young 20s.
Yeah,
but really she's only 14. And mm-hmm. So I think sometimes that can sort of cause us to be like, Daenerys is way too old, because she actually isn't. It's just sort of where our minds are, you know, recency bias. We look at all these other things, we look up her, but it doesn't accurately depict the character as described in the book, because I'm forgetting here that Daenerys is born in 284. So she is. Again, you know, this could be at the beginning, the end. It's roughly could somehow still theoretically be slightly different, because Daenerys is roughly the same age as Jon, right? Jon's born in 283, I believe.
Right, they're real close. Yeah,
it's incredibly close. Because then, let me see here. So that means that young Griff, if he is the actual Aegon Targaryen, right? When is he born? Because he's a babe. Is that that's 283 is when he's born?
Let me look real quick. He is old. I was saying he's older. He's obviously older than those two. He should be older anyways, if he's the real Aegon. It's always hard to find him if I can speak. My gosh.
I know, because you type in Aegon and then you get like a million Aegons.
Yeah, you have to get Son of Rhaegar. Who was born
Aegon Targaryen. He's born in late 281 or early 282.
Because now, which young one is Griff, it, buddy?
Exactly. Because even young Griff, when you look at pictures of young Griff, like fan art, he looks like he's younger than Daenerys. And so,
yeah.
You know, we're always like, well, hold on a second. None of this stuff adds up. Like,
right. And so they're all pretty close. That 282 AC. So I think what I did one time is I clicked on these dates. You can click on like 283 AC. By the way, I love the wiki. Shout out to the wiki. Good stuff on there. 282 AC. You can see who was born and you can see the events that take place.
Right.
Which is really kind of cool. 283. Here we go. This is where all the births. There we go. You've got Bella, a girl from the Riverlands, bastard daughter to Robert Baratheon. Desmond Redwine, Jane Westerling, Jon Snow, bastard of Eddard Stark by an unknown woman. That's what it says. Bastard of Eddard Stark, my friend. Let's see. Marjorie Tyrell, Mira Reed, daughter of Hallen Reed, Robb Stark, son of Eddard Stark and Catelyn Tully, Robert Frey, son of Raymond Frey, and Banny Beesby. Samwell Tarly, son of Randall Tarly. Okay. Yeah.
Let me see. I mean, I guess ultimately what I'm trying to look at here is with this sort of Three Heads of the Dragon, Song of Ice and Fire prophecy, for it to be meant of that boy, which Aegon couldn't be looking at Lyanna during that. That would be impossible. Because for him to say, he would have to be speaking of young, or theoretically young Griff, or the Aegon that's killed, mm-hmm. and then saying there must be one more. He would have to be looking at Elia, mm-hmm. and so for that to sort of the only way you could do that, still have a third daughter, or your third child. Daughter would be if Dany is actually Rhaegar's daughter.
Yeah,
which is a theory.
It's a theory. Well, what I like
then is, then that would make way more sense, because then you'd have the three kids. You'd have Visenya, Rhaenys, and Aegon going along with Rhaenys, Aegon, and mm-hmm. actually should be Rhaenyra, even though it's Daenerys.
Yeah,
or Rhaenys. Yeah. You know what I mean. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, so the thing that I liked is when you look at the Mummer's Dragon, and people always want to call young Griff fake. They want to say he's fake on. Maybe he's not. You know? Maybe he's not.
Maybe he's the real deal.
Maybe he's the prince that's promised. Tyrion does he has like a dragon's kind of dragon spirit to him, kind of
I think John Connington would have known by now.
Heck, right? Yes. I mean, either John Connington.
Don't you think John Connington would know that he's a fake?
Yes, he would. He would know, or he is, or he's deep in the pocketbooks, or he's being paid, or something. I mean,
he's been clinging on to the idea of this could be Rhaegar's son, because he was, you know, mm-hmm. probably in love with Rhaegar.
Yeah. Yeah,
that seems to be more likely that he was in love with Rhaegar,
yeah,
than just his really good friend.
I really do like the whole. I don't know why. It's probably not true, but I love the idea that if you did have twins born and it was unexpected and they were one taken north, one taken south, and possibly you have the Kingsguard, like Gerald Hightower and some of those guys met with Ned and Eddard Stark, and they and Hallen Reed basically conjured up something, some baby swap situation for Lyanna. I think that stuff, it's entertaining. I like those ideas are very interesting because of people like Corin Halfhand and Mance Rayder and Val being looking almost Targaryen-like and being a princess. And that's what she's called, like the Wildling Princess. So...
we just need the new book, you know, because we can speculate on this all day. But let's move on here, because okay, as so we were gonna do we were going to do our Ravens, but man, this whole recording experience, guys, has turned into quite literally, I think we're on like hour three going into hour four here. So what we've ultimately done is we've kind of cut this episode up a bit. So you guys just listened to the chapter. We're recording this afterwards here. Then we have two Ravens, which will be next time's episode, of which we are looking at the symbolism of colors, mm-hmm. which is like it's a huge breakdown of the symbolism of colors. And then we moved into a pretty cool one about Benjen Stark. Now, what we ultimately ended up doing is then Ez and I went on this deep dive. So we had to like pause the recording. I mean, yeah. There's a lot going on here. And we did a big breakdown of the symbolism of colors in A Song of Ice and Fire. That's going to be our extended edition for this sort of part one of this episode. But we're putting it on Patreon and Apple Premium as free content. So all you gotta do is go check, listen to the extended of that, which is like a full, and that's like a 40 minute talk I just had. So that will be on Patreon. You can listen to it for free. And then on Apple Premium, you can listen to it. You don't have to pay, be a part of it, part of the pay portion of Apple Premium. You can, there's also this other section called like freemium, which is just if you're subscribed to the podcast on iTunes. So you can get that. You can listen to that. It's just it's like another 40 minute conversation in which we're breaking down the symbolism of colors. I mean, that was a deep dive as we just recorded. I know it's sort of weird because you're listening to this here, but as I just recorded it, and we're going to be talking about like the forks of the trident and the symbolism of color that goes into it. Then we will move into which will be at part two of this main episode, which will be next week's podcast. We talk about all of the symbolism of sort of food. I mean, we're mm-hmm. talking about plums and what they mean, and Arbor Gold, which we talked about for a long time, which is lies. Mm-hmm. And then there are some other things too, like boars, and how every time you see a boar being served as mm-hmm. food, it means that a regime is about to fall. Yeah. And so that was super, super interesting as well. So we hope you check that out. And then we're about to come back, as I'm about to record next week's extended edition, which we will also be releasing on Apple Premium and Patreon, both for free. Both mm-hmm. So Patreon, you just got to go check that out. And then Apple Premium, you just got to be sort of subscribed. You don't have to be into the paid service. It's just that sort of freemium level. You just have to be subscribed to the podcast on iTunes.
Yeah, it's pretty sick. I think it's cool. We kind of want to see some of the data. So we thought we wanted to just give you guys something extra, extend those conversations. And they're cool conversations. I got to say, they're not just like us taking the winds of winter theory. We're looking at symbolism in color and in foods. And later on, we'll even do gemstones. I think so. The follow up to our part two is going to be looking at some emeralds. And then we can even look into sapphires and things like that. There's some fascinating, cool stuff that just there's so much. We sometimes don't get a chance to dive into all that stuff. And since it's summer vacation and we're kind of out, you know, trying to free up a bit more time here, we're making room for it, and this is exciting for us.
Absolutely. So all right, guys, so with that, stay tuned for sort of next week's episode, which is the part two of this episode, and be sure to check out that free sort of extra content that is extended editions on Patreon and Apple Premium here. So with that, guys, we'll see you next time, and remember that winter is coming. Hello and welcome to Ben the Nia Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt the Bud Knight.
I'm sorry, dude. You gotta do it again. I couldn't find the intro either. Just keep it rolling. Just keep everything rolling. And I'll use this maybe.
Can't find it either.
And then I had to scroll through the doc watching the TV. Matt and I put things in the doc that are not necessarily appropriate. Okay.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.